1:30. Words and a task force. Reading Morsch's first Fed meeting, a structural retreat and framework. Concession. At 2:00 p.m. Eastern Time on Wednesday, June 17, 2026. The Federal Open Market Committee released its post-meeting statement following the conclusion of Federal Reserve Chair Kevin Warsh's first scheduled meeting as the institution's 17th chair. Confirmed by the Senate 54-45 on May 13, 2026, and sworn in on May 22, the statement was 130 words. The committee voted 12-0 to hold the federal funds rate target range at 3.50-3.75%, where it has stood since the December 2025 rate cut concluded the prior easing cycle. 17 of 18 participants in the Summary of Economic Projections judged the risks to their inflation forecasts to be tilted to the upside. One judged balanced risks, zero saw downside risk. The median projection for the year-end 2026 federal funds rate moved from 3.4% in the March SEP to 3.8% in June, flipping the committee's implied policy path from one expected cut to one expected hike. Warsh himself declined to submit a personal projection to the dot plot, an unprecedented choice for a sitting chair. At the press conference half an hour later, Warsh announced 5 task forces to review Federal Reserve operations, communications, balance sheet policy, use of existing data sources, productivity and jobs, and, most consequentially for the framework's broader analytical project, the Fed's inflation framework. Their common charge, in Warsh's words, is to start with first principles, ask hard questions, examine current practice, consider alternatives, and ultimately propose next steps for policymaker consideration. Each of these institutional choices deserves careful framework reading. Taken together, they constitute the most substantial single-meeting restructuring of the Federal Reserve's communication regime since the regime itself began in February 1994. This essay argues that the restructuring is not merely cosmetic, not merely the new chair establishing his preferences in public, and not merely a political economy stress test arriving under the Warsh transition. The restructuring is 2 coherent structural moves operating in tandem. A deliberate retreat from the post-1994 forward guidance regime that built the substitute layer architecture the catalog has been documenting across nearly 2 years of essays, and an opening of the inflation measurement question that this catalog's Article 20 aggregates that lie began making in detail in May. The framework reads what the institution has now operationally adopted. This is the 14th installment of Watching the Cracks. It proceeds in 4 sections. First, the 130-word statement read against the 32-year arc of FOMC communication evolution from Greenspan, 1994, through Bernanke and Powell, to Warsh. Second, the unprecedented choice by the sitting chair to abstain from the dot plot and what the abstention reveals about the institution's current relationship to its own forecasting apparatus. Third, the Inflation Measurement Task Force read against the catalog's prior critique of how the Federal Reserve constructs and defends its 2% target. Fourth, the framework's synthesis of what the institutional pivot reveals about the broader monetary architecture the catalog has been documenting, and what to watch for as the Warsh-era restructuring proceeds, a note on intellectual posture before proceeding. The framework's job throughout this catalog has been to make structural conditions visible through specific empirical analysis. The catalog has documented predictions across multiple sectors. Many of those predictions have been validated against subsequent data. The Warsh first meeting includes several institutional moves that are consistent with the framework's prior critique. The institution adopting a critique is not the same as the institution being persuaded by the critique. And the institution restructuring its communication apparatus is not the same as the institution successfully managing the underlying substrate fragility the apparatus was designed to mask. The framework's reading is descriptive of what has happened operationally. The reading does not predict whether the operational changes will produce the outcomes the framework's broader thesis would consider necessary, the 130-word retreat. The framework reads Warsh's 130-word statement against a specific historical trajectory. On February 4, 1994, Chairman Alan Greenspan issued the first post-meeting statement in Federal Reserve history. The statement was 99 words in 4 sentences. It announced not a numerical rate target, but a decision to increase slightly the degree of pressure on reserve positions. The Fed did not publish a federal funds target until 1994-95, described as the first firming of reserve market conditions by the committee since early 1989, and gave Greenspan's reasoning for announcing immediately to avoid any misunderstanding of the committee's purposes. The 1994 statement was a discreet innovation in Fed communication, breaking with the prior regime in which monetary policy decisions were inferred by market participants from open market operations rather than announced explicitly. For the next 5 years, statements were issued only at meetings where the committee changed the target rate. In May 1999, the committee began releasing statements after every meeting. In February 2000, the statements began including an early form of forward guidance, the balance of risks assessment that signaled the committee's directional bias for future policy. The trajectory after 2000 is the central documented arc of post-Volcker monetary policy communications. Forward guidance became a regular component of the post-meeting statement throughout the 2000s. Expanded substantially during the 2008 to 2009 financial crisis as the federal funds rate approached the zero lower bound, and was elevated by Chairman Ben Bernanke as one of the primary policy instruments available to the Federal Reserve when conventional rate cuts had reached their limit. By December 2014, the post-meeting statement had grown to roughly 562 words of policy text, more than five times the length of Greenspan's original 99 words. The apparatus was Bernanke's, but the December 2014 statement was not. Bernanke had left the board in January 2014, and that statement went out over Janet Yellen's name. The Federal Reserve's own published research documented this trajectory in detail. Hernandez, Murillo, and Schell, writing in the St. Louis Fed's Economic Synopses in 2014, found the early statements read at a grade level of 9 to 14 years of schooling, while recent ones read at 3 years beyond a four-year college degree. Acosta and Mead followed with a semantic analysis in Fed's notes in September 2015. A measurable rise in technical specificity that Fed researchers themselves analyzed as a structural change in how the institution communicates with the public. The intellectual case for the expansion was articulated explicitly by Bernanke himself in his January 2020 American Economic Association presidential address. Forward guidance, Bernanke argued, was a powerful policy tool that, combined with quantitative easing, gave the Federal Reserve significant additional space to provide monetary accommodation when standard policy rates were at the zero lower bound. The mechanism Bernanke described was straightforward, by shaping market expectations about the future path of short-term rates. The central bank could affect long-term rates that historically had been more important for private sector borrowing decisions. Bernanke's framing was widely accepted by Fed leadership across both his and Janet Yellen's tenures, and was inherited by Jerome Powell when he assumed the chairmanship in 2018. Powell maintained the basic apparatus while adjusting the specific language across different policy phases, emphasizing patience during the late 2018 pivot, explicit calendar guidance during the early COVID response, and data dependence through the 2022 to 2024 tightening cycle. The structural critique of forward guidance, which has existed throughout the regime but has accumulated weight in recent years, operates on three observations. First, forward guidance only works to the extent that market participants believe the central bank will follow through on its stated path, which means the tool's effectiveness depends on a credibility-trust relationship that the central bank must continuously manage. Second, the central bank's projections about future policy are themselves uncertain forecasts, and communicating those forecasts as if they were commitments creates an information asymmetry between what the central bank knows and what it tells the public. Third, the accumulated apparatus of forward guidance, dot plots, summary of economic projections, and press conference messaging tends to overdetermine the policy environment, generating market dependence on central bank communication that the central bank then must continue producing to avoid disruptive shocks when expectations diverge from outcomes. Kevin Warsh has been a public critic of all three dimensions of the forward guidance regime for years. Warsh served on the Federal Reserve Board of Governors from 2006 to 2011, including through the most severe phase of the 2008 financial crisis, and has been associated with the institutionally hawkish faction of post-crisis Fed analysis. He has long criticized the institution for communicating too much and too precisely. He dismissed core PCE, The Fed's preferred inflation gauge as a rough swag. Swag being short for scientific wild guess. And he told the Senate Banking Committee on April 21, 2026, during his confirmation hearing, that inflation is a choice, and the Fed must take responsibility for it. His pre-confirmation positions made clear that he would seek to substantially restructure the communication regime. The market participants who watched his confirmation expected exactly the kind of statement, compression, that arrived on June 17. Warsh's first statement at 130 words is structurally comparable to Greenspan's 1994 baseline. The size of the reduction depends on what is counted, and the figure this essay first reported, a 62% cut from 341 words, compared unlike bases. On policy text alone, the April statement ran 244 words and the June statement 114, a reduction of about 53%. The 341-word figure for April includes the voting members list, which in April was unusually long because four members dissented, and each dissent was explained. The widely reported 130 words for June includes the vote line. Counted consistently, the cut is roughly half rather than nearly two-thirds, which is still the sharpest single meeting compression in the regime's history. The eliminated content was not arbitrary. It consisted of the specific forward guidance language that the post-2000 regime had progressively built into each statement. The April statement included language signaling, an easing bias for future policy. The committee would weigh the extent and timing of additional adjustments to the target range, where the word additional implied that the next move, like the last ones, would be a cut. Three members had dissented in April, specifically over that bias. It is gone from the June statement. The April statement also carried two paragraphs of calibration about how the committee would assess incoming information and what it would take into account. Both are gone. What remained in the 130 words was a brief description of current economic conditions and a vow to control inflation. As Warsh said at the press conference, it's a bit shorter, a bit simpler, and it dispenses with some older language. That statement just gives you the facts, as best we can judge it. The framework's reading, forward guidance, was always, partially, a manipulation mechanism dressed as transparency. Its effectiveness in shaping market expectations depended on the central bank presenting its own uncertain forecasts as if they were policy commitments, and on market participants accepting that presentation as informationally meaningful even when the underlying economic conditions did not warrant the implied confidence. The post-2008 expansion of forward guidance occurred precisely during the period when the Federal Reserve's balance sheet operations were producing the substitute layer architecture. The catalog has been documenting agency MBS holdings, expanded treasury portfolios, the operational scaffolding of substitute claims on substitute, claims that the framework's Article 8 on agency MBS, Article 27 on commercial real estate's extend and pretend cycle, and other catalog installments have engaged at the structural level. The communication regime grew in lockstep with the substrate fragility accumulation. The communication regime functioned throughout this period to maintain market confidence in the institutional management of conditions that the institution could not actually fully control. Warsh's deliberate dismantling of the communication regime is the institution's own acknowledgement that the prior arrangement was not working as advertised. The framework does not claim that Warsh has consciously adopted the catalog's specific critique. The framework does claim that the institutional choice Warsh has made is operationally consistent with what the catalog has been arguing for. The Greenspan 1994 baseline was a discrete announcement of rate decisions with brief reasoning. The Warsh 2026 baseline returns substantially to that posture. The 32-year experiment with progressively elaborate forward guidance has been substantially walked back by the institution itself, the chair without a dot. The second institutional choice that warrants careful reading is Warsh's decision not to submit his own projection to the Summary of Economic Projections, the so-called dot plot that maps the year-end interest rate forecasts of FOMC participants. The June 17 dot plot contained 18 dots for 2026-2027 and the longer run, and 17 dots for 2028. Under standard practice, with 19 participants, 7 board governors, plus 12 Federal Reserve Bank presidents, the chart would contain 19 dots. The missing dot, Warsh confirmed at the press conference, was his own. He had encouraged his colleagues to submit their projections, but had declined to submit his. The choice is unprecedented for a sitting chair. No chair has previously abstained. The SEP itself dates to November 2007, but the interest rate projections that became the dot plot were added in January 2012. So the relevant record is 14 years rather than 19. Bernanke, Yellen, and Powell each submitted a rate projection in every quarterly cycle from 2012 onward. The chair's dot has historically been treated as a meaningful signal, even though its specific identification has never been published. Sophisticated Fed watchers have inferred which dot belonged to the chair through comparison with the chair's prior projections and through analysis of dispersion patterns across meetings. Warsh's stated reasoning for abstaining was that he is reconsidering the value of the forecasting tool itself and did not want to commit to a projection in a regime he was actively reviewing. The five task forces include one specifically reviewing the Fed's monetary policy operations and another reviewing communications, both of which would naturally engage the question of whether the SEP and dot plot should continue in their current form. Warsh has said in prior public statements that the dot plot creates an anchoring problem in which market participants treat the projections as commitments rather than as conditional forecasts. With the same credibility mechanism problems that apply to the broader forward guidance apparatus. The framework reads the chair's abstention as a deeper version of the 130-word statement's message. The 130-word statement removes the content of forward guidance from the communication regime. The chair's abstention from the dot plot removes the signal of the chair's own projections, which has been one of the most closely watched single pieces of information in monetary policy communications for the past two decades. The combined message. The chair believes that the current apparatus for communicating policy expectations is structurally flawed, and he is operationally exiting his own participation in it while leaving the rest of the apparatus running for the time being. This is consistent with the catalog's prior analysis of how central bank communication regimes generate the substitute layer dynamics the framework has documented. Article 20 made the case that the 2% target itself is a monetarist artifact whose communication function exceeds its analytical justification. The chair declining to participate in the dot plot is an institutional acknowledgement that some communication tools may be more performative than informational. A chair who continues to believe in the analytical content of his own forecast would submit it. A chair who believes the forecast format itself misrepresents what monetary policy can know would not. Warsh's choice is the second posture made operationally explicit. The institutional implication is structurally consequential. The dot plot has been one of the primary information transmission mechanisms by which market participants formed expectations about future Fed policy. Removing the chair's input from this mechanism, while preserving the rest, creates an asymmetry that market participants will need to interpret as the new regime stabilizes. The September 16, 2026 SEP, the next quarterly release, will be the first complete cycle in which the Warsh-era practice operates. If Warsh continues to abstain, the dot plot will progressively become an institution, without the chair forecast. If Warsh announces a broader reform, possibly discontinuing the SEP in its current form, the September meeting could include that announcement. The task force that adopts the framework's argument, the most analytically consequential single announcement from Warsh's June 17 press conference, was the formation of five task forces to review Federal Reserve operations. The five task forces will review communications, balance sheet policy, the use of existing data sources, productivity and jobs, and, most consequentially for the framework's project, the Fed's inflation framework. Warsh said he expects them to begin work within a couple of weeks to start to provide framing in the fall, and hopefully for most, if not all, to conclude by year-end. He noted that the inflation task force will not consider changes to the Fed's 2% target itself at this stage. A precision the framework owes the reader, the fifth task force's public remit is the Fed's inflation framework, and the press conference coverage rendered its subject as the causes of inflation. Neither formulation is the phrase, the causes of inflation, and how it is measured, that an earlier version of this essay placed in quotation marks. That clause was this essay's own compression of what an inflation framework review would have to encompass, and it should not have been presented as the Fed's language. Whether measurement falls inside the remit is therefore an inference rather than a quotation, a well-founded inference. Given that the chair who set the remit has called the committee's preferred gauge a rough swag, but an inference, the distinction matters because the essay's central claim rests on it. The framework reads the Inflation Measurement Task Force as the most direct institutional adoption of the catalog's prior critique that has yet occurred. Article 20 of this catalog, published on May 22, 2026, argued that the 2% target was a monetarist artifact whose institutional origin was the Reserve Bank of New Zealand's adoption in 1990 under Governor Don Brash, that the Boskin Commission's 1996 methodological changes to U.S. CPI calculation produced a measurement framework that systematically understates household cost of living changes, and that the broader apparatus of inflation measurement has accumulated structural problems that the institution has not been willing to engage publicly. The article was published as the framework's most direct critique of how the Federal Reserve constructs and defends its central policy target. The Warsh Task Force is now operationally opening exactly this question. The framework needs to engage what this means with care, because the catalog's intellectual posture has consistently been to make falsifiable forward predictions and engage the results honestly. The Warsh Task Force is not the same as the Federal Reserve formally repudiating its prior inflation measurement methodology. The task force is exactly what its name describes, an institutional review process that will produce findings and recommendations through fall 2026 and may or may not result in operational changes to how the institution constructs its target measurement. The framework's reading is that the task force represents the institution opening the question that the prior regime treated as closed, with the institutional intent to address what Warsh and his colleagues believe to be real measurement problems. The specific institutional questions the task force will engage are not yet public, but several can be inferred from Warsh's prior public statements and from the broader trajectory of his analytical positions. Warsh has been a long-standing critic of core PCE as the Fed's preferred inflation measure, calling it a rough swag and favoring trimmed measures. Specifically, the Dallas Fed's trimmed mean PCE and the Cleveland Fed's median PCE, which stripped the most extreme price movements at both ends of the basket before taking a weighted average. The task force may produce recommendations to shift the Fed's preferred measure or to expand the set of measures the committee considers. Warsh has also suggested that the Fed's inflation measurement does not adequately capture the price changes households actually experience, a critique that aligns with a broader catalog of work, including this catalog's Article 23 on college tuition versus CPI, and wages, documenting the gap between official measurement and household reality. The 2% target itself, Warsh said, will not be revisited at this stage. His framing was distinctive. He said he focuses on the left of the decimal point. The 2s is the left, the 0 is the right. Asked whether he was considering raising or lowering the target, Warsh said he saw no reason until we've reestablished our commitment and ability to deliver on the 2% objective to revisit it. The framework's reading, the chair has chosen to defend the 2% target verbally while operationally opening the question of how 2% is measured. Without changing the headline number, the institution can change what the number means through methodological adjustments, through shifts in preferred indices, through reweighting of components, through any of the specific technical changes the task force may recommend. The number stays the same. What the number describes is what is being put on the table. This is precisely the analytical move the framework has been making since Article 20. The argument was not that 2% is the wrong number. The argument was that 2%, as constructed by the current measurement apparatus, is a structurally flawed target whose underlying mechanics deserve scrutiny. The Warsh Task Force is operationally opening the scrutiny. The framework does not predict what the task force will conclude or what operational changes will follow from its work. The framework does observe that the institution has, through the task force's formation, conceded that the prior measurement regime is not analytically settled in the way the prior communication regime presented it as being. The other four task forces deserve briefer notice because they each touch the catalog's prior analysis at specific points. The Balance Sheet Policy Task Force engages the framework's prior work on open market operations, Article 4, and the substitute layer architecture of central bank balance sheet operations more directly than a review of policy implementation in the abstract would. The Communications Task Force will engage the questions discussed above about forward guidance, the dot plot, and the broader transparency regime. The Data Sources Task Force will examine what the institution measures, which connects to the catalog's prior critique of how aggregates obscure structural conditions. Articles 17, 20, 26, 28, 29. The Productivity and Jobs Task Force will engage the dynamics, the catalogs, Article 28 documented in detail, the AI labor substitution effects, the salability inversion across occupation categories, and the broader question of what labor market metrics actually measure in 2026 conditions. The framework's broader observation, Warsh has, through these five task forces, opened every substantive institutional question that the catalog has been engaging across the past 2 years of essays. The task forces are not exhaustive. They do not engage the housing dynamics, the cryptocurrency dynamics, the supply chain propagation dynamics, or the commercial real estate dynamics that the catalog has documented separately. But the four central institutional questions of Federal Reserve operations, policy implementation, communications, data measurement, and labor market analysis are now all being institutionally reviewed by the new chair within his first month in office. The reviews may produce substantive reform, they may produce cosmetic adjustments, they may produce reports that disappear into institutional files. The framework's reading is that the opening of the reviews is itself the analytically consequential event, regardless of what the reviews ultimately produce. The institutional pivot Warsh executed on June 17 should be read as structurally coherent rather than as a collection of separate institutional choices. The 130-word statement, the chair's abstention from the dot plot, the five task forces, and the 17 of 18 hawkish risk assessment all operate together as the new chair, establishing a different relationship between the Federal Reserve and the broader monetary architecture the catalog has been documenting. The prior regime, from approximately 1994 through 2026, accumulated a communication apparatus designed to project institutional confidence about the management of substrate conditions whose actual operation the institution could not fully control. The post-2008 expansion of the apparatus occurred during the period when the substitute layer architecture of agency MBS expanded Treasury holdings, central bank balance sheet operations, and the broader scaffolding of substitute claims on substitute claims grew to its current configuration. The communication regime functioned, throughout this period, to maintain market confidence in conditions that the institution managed through increasingly elaborate substitute layer mechanisms. The framework's broader argument across the catalog has been that this configuration produced accumulated substrate fragility visible across banking, Article 16, Article 27, housing, Articles 17 to 19, supply chains, Articles 26, 29, precious metals, Article 24, cryptocurrency, Articles 13 to 15, 25, commercial real estate, Article 27, and labor markets, Article 28, that the institution cannot resolve through conventional monetary policy because the conventional toolkit produced the substrate fragility in the first place. Warsh's institutional pivot can be read in two distinct ways, and the framework should be honest about which it does and does not commit to. One reading, the pivot is a substantive recognition that the prior regime did not work, and the new chair intends to restructure the institution in ways that will reduce its dependence on substitute layer architecture and refocus monetary policy on the more limited objectives a central bank can credibly pursue. Under this reading, the task forces will produce meaningful reforms. The communication regime will continue to compress towards something closer to the 1994 baseline, and the institution will operationally pull back from the post-2008 expansion of its responsibilities. This reading is consistent with Warsh's pre-confirmation positions and with the structural logic of the moves he made on June 17. A different reading, the pivot is primarily a political economy response to the specific 2026 conditions Warsh inherited, high inflation, political pressure from the Trump administration that nominated him to deliver rate cuts, market expectations that were misaligned with the institutional credibility establishment task he needed to execute, and the structural changes are temporary credibility moves rather than durable institutional reforms. Under this reading, the task forces will produce reports that are quietly incorporated without substantive operational changes. The communication regime will gradually re-expand as Warsh consolidates his institutional position, and the institution will return to something resembling the pre-2026 configuration once the immediate inflation pressure subsides. The framework cannot determine which reading is correct from the available evidence on June 17 alone. The signal from Warsh's specific institutional choices is consistent with both readings, and both readings are consistent with his prior public statements. What the framework can observe is that the direction of the institutional choices is consistent with the catalog's prior critique, that the task force on inflation measurement is operationally opening the specific question, the frameworks, and that the broader pattern of substitute layer fragility the catalog has been documenting is now being acknowledged at the institutional level in ways that the prior regime would not have allowed. The September 15-16, 2026 FOMC meeting will be the first complete test of which reading is correct. By that meeting, the May and June PCE prints will have arrived. The early Q3 2026 economic data will be visible. The initial work of the five task forces will be underway, and the markets will have had 3 months to adjust to the new communication regime. If the September statement returns to the prior length and complexity, the framework will conclude that the political economy reading was correct. If the September statement maintains the 130-word baseline and incorporates the early task force findings into the new regime, the framework will conclude that the substantive reading is correct. The 17 of 18 hawkish dot plot positions suggest the committee is operating in a posture consistent with the substantive reading, but the framework should resist drawing conclusions from a single meeting. The closing observation. The Federal Reserve's communication regime has been the institutional infrastructure for one of the most consequential monetary architecture transformations in U.S. economic history. The post-2008 substitute layer expansion that the framework's catalog has been documenting across 2 years of specific applied analysis. The regime was built progressively from Greenspan's 1994 first statement through Bernanke's 2008 to 2014 forward guidance expansion, maintained through Yellen and Powell with adjustments to specific language, and used by all three of those chairs to project institutional confidence about conditions whose operational reality the regime existed in part to obscure. Warsh's June 17 statement is roughly the length of the regime's original 99-word baseline before forward guidance was introduced, 114 words of policy text, 130 as reported. The art from 99 to 562 and back to 114 is the regime's complete rise and retreat in three data points. The chair himself declined to submit his projection to the forecast apparatus that has been one of the regime's central tools. Five task forces have been formed to review the institutional infrastructure across the dimensions that align most directly with the framework's prior critique. The institution has not announced that it is repudiating the prior regime. The institution has operationally begun walking the regime back. The framework's prior catalog made specific predictions across multiple sectors that subsequent data has substantially validated. The May 2026 CPI release validated the Hormuz lag predictions in Article 26. The FDIC Q1 2026 quarterly banking profile validated the banking diagnostics in Article 16. The CRE fire sale transactions documented in Article 27 are continuing through 2026 with the trajectories the article forecast. The Iran wallet seizures, Article 25 documented, continued through Bessent's Reagan Forum disclosures. The Warsh first meeting is the latest validation event, not of a specific predicted data point, but of the broader structural reading the catalog has been arguing for. That the post-2008 monetary architecture has accumulated substrate fragility beyond what the institution can manage through the prior toolkit, and that the institutional acknowledgement of this fact, when it arrives, will arrive through institutional restructuring rather than through public retraction. The institutional restructuring has now begun. The framework's next several installments will engage what the September FOMC meeting reveals about whether the restructuring is durable, what the May and June PCE prints test from Article 26's predictions, and what the task force reports begin producing as fall 2026 arrives. The pattern of catalog work continues as it has throughout the past 2 years, applied analysis grounded in specific empirical events, framework-derived reading of what the events reveal about broader structural conditions, falsifiable predictions made in print and engaged honestly when subsequent data test them, and intellectual honesty about what the framework can and cannot determine from the evidence available at any specific moment. Warsh's first meeting is one such moment. the institution has executed a substantial communication regime restructuring and opened a task force review of the specific question the catalog has been pushing on. The framework reads what has happened. The framework records its reading for future testing. The work continues. This is the 14th installment of Watching the Cracks. The framework's predictions recorded here for future testing, the September 15 to 16, 2026 FOMC meeting will be the primary test of whether Warsh's communication regime restructuring is durable. Statement length holds at or below IONI 150 words. Chair continues abstaining from dot plot. Early task force findings incorporated versus political economy. Temporary statement. Link 3 expands. Institutional posture restabilizes to pre-Warsh configuration. The framework's prediction is that the restructuring will hold through at least the September and October meetings, with possible re-expansion in 2027 as immediate inflation pressures moderate. The Inflation Measurement Task Force is expected to produce findings in fall 2026 that will include recommendations to expand the Fed's preferred inflation measure, set trimmed, mean PCE, possibly additional alternative measures, but will not include recommendations to formally change the 2% target. The chart accompanying this essay shows the 99-word, 562-word, 244-word, and 114-word data points anchoring the 1994 to 2026 arc, all counted on policy text alone. Intermediate trajectory points are illustrative. The PCE release scheduled for Thursday, June 25, will provide the next major data point for testing Article 26's broader Hormuz lag prediction trajectory.